Is it cold enough for you yet? We've got the forecast so you know what to be prepared for in the next 24 hours. Also today, a new Great Lakes Railroad is being proposed that would run a wide swath around the Chicago area. And while some are excited about new jobs it could bring, others are concerned not just about the environmental impact, that it would cut straight through their land.
This is our land you're trying to take away and our income. Eminent domain is unjust business practice. It is un-American to take eminent domain.
Northern Public Radio reporters in DeKalb have been covering the issue. They join us. Plus, how a stable in Pisodom is making its horses available for therapy.
You really learn a great way to calm down and a feeling that everything's going to be okay.
That's volunteer Christy Blue. We speak with her and therapy horse facilitators about how people with mental illness or trauma are being helped. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Hope everyone's staying warm out there. We're going to have more on the weather and the forecast later this hour. But first, a new 260-mile-long railroad is being proposed for the Great Lakes Basin area. It's an $8 billion freight project that would cut a wide swath outside Chicago through northwest Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin. This is some happy because of the new jobs it could bring to the area, but others are concerned about not just the environmental impact, but the inconvenience of having it cut straight through their land.
The Great Lakes Basin Railroad is a connector. That's what it is. It's a connector. And by connecting all of these transportation assets, as I call them, together, we as communities need to know how we can leverage that and turn that into something very positive.
This is a plan that, according to the people who understand the process and what could end up after it's built, that could have a huge impact on the economy of the region, on successive generations.
We're not just a bunch of nobodies out here. This is our land you're trying to take away, and our income, and our generations to come.
Sure,
I want you to read it. Eminent domain is unjust business practice. It is un-American to take eminent domain.
That was the City of Rochelle's Economic Development Director Jason Anderson, Great Lakes Basin Transportation's founder and chair Frank Patton, and voices. Those were two farmers at a public meeting who obviously are opposed the project. That audio was collected by journalists at Northern Public Radio in DeKalb. They've been reporting all week on this project in a five-part series. WNIJ's Jenna Dooley and Sue Stevens join us now from their studios. Jenna, Sue, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to be here.
Ladies, can we start? Where would this railroad run through? It's a huge area that kind of cuts this wide circle outside of the Chicago metropolitan area. Can you kind of run us through, especially where it would run through in Illinois?
It's a really big area. It starts at near a town about 30 miles east of Gary, Indiana, and then kind of curves down around in Kankakee County, and it's kind of sweeps up. It's almost like taking the Chicago area and going way far out. So it sweeps up around Rockford area and up into Wisconsin. It ends just east of Milton, Wisconsin. So it's well beyond the suburbs of Chicago.
Right, all the way down to Kankakee. What was interesting in your reporting that you all did was in some ways this proposal would actually put railroads back to where they used to be. Is that correct? And what's the purpose of this rail line?
Yeah, this is Jenna here. Rail's been big business in America. In one of the stories, I made reference to the AMC show Hell on Wheels because it talks about the building of the first transcontinental railroad in the 1800s. Cities and towns wanted to be on these routes, but now it isn't as much in fashion to build near major population centers, largely because of noise and the fear of derailments.
And so who's behind the proposed railroad?
And that is a guy named Frank Patton. He is a guy who has made his money and served in a career where he was a computer programmer, founded a software company, retired, and then decided that he wanted to get into the rail business. And the reason that they're looking at this is because rail traffic is so congested in Chicago. There's this massive hub where all the freight rail comes in from around the country and then gets shipped out and changed. and it's really, really crowded. Trains will be backed up.
I was going to say, as all of us who have sat on those lines while we are waiting for freight traffic to go in and out of Chicago, I know.
Absolutely.
I'm not the only one who sat on an Amtrak train for hours outside of Chicago, right?
Exactly. And so it really does affect not only the freight trains, but it also, and, you know, the passenger rail, but also, you know, on the roads. I've sat at many a crossing for a long time, too, in my car. So he is the guy behind it. He founded a company called Great Lakes Basin Transportation 5 years ago, and they've been working on this 260-mile, $8 billion project ever since.
And now, of course, we heard some voices. We heard from Frank. We heard from the City of Rochelle's Economic Development Director just a minute ago, Jason Anderson, saying why this would be great. I do want to get to why they think this would be good in a minute, but there are others who are not very happy. Sue, that audio from that meeting you attended in Morris where residents voiced their concerns, it got pretty heated. What's your sense of how vocal this opposition is? Who's opposed to this? How many people do they represent?
They are very, very vocal, and they're pretty well organized, too, and they've really pulled it together very quickly. There was another version of this, the map, the route that this would take, that went up through Boone County before it got into Wisconsin, so around Belvedere, just east of Rockford. People there were very vocal, and they told why it shouldn't go up through this area and the damage that it would cause there. So the map was changed, and it's now west of Rockford, and now we're hearing from people in that area. They found out in September and had to pull together and organize their opposition, but the people from the previous route are also helping them out. So there are a lot of, they've been primarily organizing through Facebook. They've got a lot of different sites, a lot of different groups, you know, Rock Against the Rail, Block GLB. And they actually worked together pretty well on all this. And then they've been holding public meetings. There were public hearings. The one that I went to was not one of the official Surface Transportation Board meetings that were scheduled to get public comment. This was one that Frank Patton held because he knew there were a lot of people out there with issues and that he was hoping to answer a lot of their questions. It was a really, really rowdy meeting, as I've heard that many of these meetings have been, too, with people who are just really angry because they don't want this cutting into their land.
Is that the main issue? Because then, I imagine the railroad is trying to buy their land. Is that the main issue before we get to all the environmental issues?
Yeah, I think outside of the environmental issues and the, you know, the possibility of accidents and that sort of thing, it is people who, first, they feel insulted. Many of these people are farmers, and when they hear that the company is doing everything they can to avoid populated areas, you know, they don't want to cut through downtown Rockford and have to take out homes, so they're going up through farmland, and farmers are feeling really insulted that their work and their jobs are not seen as important as people who might live in a city. They also are looking at some scary realities of having their property divided, so they wouldn't have access to parts of their property that they're used to because a train would be passing through.
Now, just to be clear, right, they're being offered money, right? They're not.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes.
And how much are we talking about?
They're being offered $20,000 an acre, which is way more than anyone would pay for an acre of farmland anywhere in Illinois. Even though Illinois has great farmland, it's not worth $20,000 an acre. But the catch is they're only paying for what they want, which is just a strip of it. It's a 200-foot wide strip.
Right, and then could cut across an entire farmland, could cut it in half or a third or whatever, right?
Yeah, so the rest of those acres aren't being, you know, that are outside the 200-foot wide strip are not being compensated for, and they might lose access to it.
We're talking to two reporters. That's Sue Stevens. Jenna Dooley is also with us from WNIJ. They're talking to us about the Great Lakes Basin transportation proposal, this railroad project. Jenna, Sue's been talking about the farmers and their specific concerns about cutting through their land. But there's also some environmental issues that people have raised. What in particular are people talking about, concerns that they have for the environment with this project?
And Sue touched on, you know, there's the threat of derailment. We hear about derailments with freight traffic, and it's very, very scary. And so there's waterways and concerns of, you know, depending on what that train would be carrying, if there were a derailment, what would that mean for water areas or what's going into private wells, things like that. Now, it is a trade-off, though, because we talk about the congested areas of Chicago, when those trains are sitting and idling, that's a very small area where those emissions are going out. Whereas if there's a wider area that's passing through and the trains are maintaining 70 miles per hour along a straight route, there are going
to
be emissions. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So there are trade-offs there. But at the same time, Northern Illinois has a lot of sensitive areas and wetlands. People don't like the idea of trains going through these areas. The company would have to mitigate if they tried to build near these sensitive areas as they pass through them. But it's still a concern.
Mm-hmm. And I know, Jenna, you spoke with Mike Phillips. He's a geologist with Illinois Valley Community College in Oglesby. And not only did he bring up Illinois' history, looking at how there were more railroads in the past than they were today, he also raised this issue of building railroads over wetlands and also the water concerns. Like, what is the railroad company doing in order to take into account, as you said, a sensitive area like a public water supply, like a well?
Well, they have to meet federal requirements too. I mean, there was going to be intense federal scrutiny on this map and where it goes over wetlands. The company lawyer, the people behind the plan to build it, told me that they have gone through and tried to lay out as much geography as possible. They said they even saw a small cemetery that they found later on. And so then as these different things pop up, and if people draw to their attention through the map, hey, did you know this cemetery was here? Do you know this well is there? They're going to have to really cross their T's and dot their I's, not only for the people that whose land this would go through, but also for the federal government.
And what does the federal government, what kind of questions, I imagine there are people who have other environmental concerns, what kind of things do they want the federal government and other stakeholders to be asking before this gets approved?
Well, and the environmental impact statement, I mean, this is something that's going to take several years, and so it's going to cover a lot of ground here. The company has already had to, or has already redrawn their map a couple of times, as Sue mentioned, as wetland areas come up. So there is going to be, when I talked to Mike Phillips, who's a geologist, as you mentioned, at Illinois Valley Community College, he said some of the questions should be, where are the well areas, the recharge areas for the wells that serve cities? That would be kind of where they start getting their water. They should be asking, what does the company plan to do for that? And also, in case of derailment, what emergency response plans will be in place should that happen?
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, all of this, as you mentioned, is about trade-offs, right? Because we're talking about the environmental trade-offs of alleviating freight traffic around Chicago, those pollution concerns. We're also, of course, hearing from towns like Rochelle, who their economic development director, who says that this is an important thing for the region. What are economic development people saying across these towns? What about other economic benefits are we thinking about would be helpful here for these areas?
If everything gets approved, there would be some temporary construction jobs, and also manufacturers who may want to place their warehouses near these rail lines. You mentioned Rochelle. It is known as the hub city. Their view of rail is quite positive because of the jobs it's already brought into the city over the last couple of years.
And some of the farmers in the area, they've all been offered the possibility of having access to the line so they could move their goods on train by using that line that's passing right through their land. That gets a lot of hoots in public meeting because these are small farmers who really would not be able to use a train in that way. But along the way, there could be a few very, very large farms that could use that sort of access. And again, like with companies, like Jenna mentioned, that's the rail access that they could get could be very beneficial.
What's the timeline for getting this proposed route approved and ultimately for construction? As you said, I imagine this is a long process that has to go through, and this is the beginning of it, it sounds like.
Oh, yes. This has been going on for just about a year, a little more than a year now, and we are still in the fact-gathering part for the environmental impact study with the Surface Transportation Board that will ultimately rule on this. And there's once they gather up these facts, and there's a really, it's really interesting on their website. You can read thousands and thousands of comments made by the public already about how it would affect them directly. So people are still doing that. Once the Surface Transportation Board puts together their initial study, then it's going to be another year after that while they hold more public hearings about it. And meanwhile, the owner of the project, Frank Patton, has asked that be suspended, the environmental impact study, so he can get to work on other things because he still has to get railroads to commit to using this. That's a huge issue here. There are already two of the six major railroads that serve the Chicago area that have said not interested. So he wants to get to work on those sorts of things. He'd also like to start building in 2018. That's
a very ambitious timeline. Yeah,
it's very ambitious. So, you know, that doesn't quite jibe with the government's timeline on this. So we'll see how that turns out.
Jenna, so we just have about a minute left, but as you guys are, you're in the middle of the five-part series. We'll tweet out all the links to their stories if you follow 21ST Show. I know you are, today you talked about eminent domain. You're going to be exploring more of the economic benefits, the landowner's perspective on all of this, not giving anything away. What would you say is the biggest takeaway for Illinois residents across the state about this project?
We wanted to present a series that took a step back and looked at the basics and went back to a balanced view of what do the landowners feel and how would this benefit the economy. And so we wanted to use this as a case study to draw attention to issues of eminent domain, not in my backyard sentiment, because these topics are not just isolated to Northern Illinois. These are things we are obviously seeing nationally.
Thanks very much for joining us. That's Jenna Dooley with WNIJ. I want to thank Sue Stevens as well. Their entire series is online. We'll tweet out all the links to that. That'll also be at 21stshow.org. Jenna, Sue, thanks for being with me.
You are welcome.
You're welcome.
Fun.
Coming up, we're going to be talking about a farm, some stables actually in Pasodum that are doing, allowing their horses to be available for therapy. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. A few months ago here at our station, we had a surprise visit from miniature therapy horses. Everybody loved them. It also turned us onto the topic of therapy horses and how they can especially help people who have trauma or mental illnesses cope. And we're going to talk about that for a few minutes. We're joined in studio now by a few people who are working on horse therapy across central Illinois. Dorothy Reigel is the owner of Healing Horses Stables in Pasodum. And with her as well is Christy Blue. She's a volunteer. She helps facilitate meetings with patients. She's also received some help herself. Martha Klipp is also with us. She's the co-facilitator at the Two Spirit Counseling Center in Urbana. Dory, Christy, Martha, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here with me.
Thank you for having me.
Christy, can I start with you? Why did you originally decide to volunteer at the stables? What took you to wanting to be around these horses?
Actually, it started as a conversation between my therapist and I, just a random chat we were having. Always enjoyed working with animals, and we were talking about service animals. I also work here on campus, over in disability services, so I have that tie-in with service animals over there, and just talking about how fun that would be on both sides, receiving those kind of services and as well being able to offer those kind of services. And we're talking about not having any knowledge if that was even something available around here. So later that afternoon, I just got online and was doing some searching and actually came across a website for Dory's Place. And I thought, well, I ought to go down and check that out and let it just kind of sit there for a while because as well, I struggle with some anxiety and depression and some other issues. And I thought that would be great to go down and just have that experience.
What was it like when you first went?
Oh, it was amazing because I was really kind of scared to go just because I think it was that.
Horses are big.
They are. They are.
That's my first
thought,
right?
I had lived for a time at a friend's farm, so I had been around horses, but not so much like a one-on-one interaction. So I was coming back through town and stopped there one afternoon and went in, and Dory was in the arena. And she came out, and I just kind of introduced myself, and they had on the website that, you know, they were welcoming volunteers, and I shared with her a little bit about my story and that I was interested in volunteering, but I would only be available in the evenings because of my day job, and I didn't know if that was going to work. And I think the first thing out of her mouth was, "Would you like to come meet some of the horses?" And she took me over, and we talked, and I met a couple of horses, and I was hooked. And I think that was maybe on a Wednesday or a Thursday, and I was going to think about it and come back on a Monday. And I remember every day I was like a little kid. I couldn't wait for Monday to come so I could go see the horses. And I fell in love, and I've been hooked ever since.
And what is it about it, you think? Do you find it, is it a calming thing? What is it in particular?
It really is. The environment as a whole, to be out there, it's, for me, it's a very relaxing place. I feel very comfortable out there. I always say I can just go out there and be me. I feel very comfortable out there, especially if I'm feeling anxious. I feel like it's a place that I could be anxious at, and not feel like I'm being judged or being watched, or, you know, I can go in there and sit with the horses or play with them. I can go in and as I do my volunteer work, working with the other riders, feel like I'm doing something good and giving back as well as receiving. It's really kind of feeling like I'm double dipping because I get so much as well as being able to give. And it just, I told somebody the other day, I said, if you just came in there and sat down and did nothing, just as an observer, I said, you're going to leave there feeling so good. I said, you can't go in there and watch those horses and be around them and not smile.
Dory, what led you to this point of having your stable, the whole notion of your stable being Healing Horses?
Well, I grew up on horses, and my mother had a friend who was blind, and she had her friend jump on our horse. The horse jumped, and her friend said, "It's like flying." Just loved that freedom of mobility. And so Healing Horse Stable started out as a therapeutic riding center for differently abled people. But then we've expanded into behavior disordered and emotionally disturbed riders also. And not everybody who comes out rides, but they all want to interact with the horse in one way or another.
You know, we've been asking people about their experiences with therapy horses on Reddit this week, and we've been hearing some really interesting comments from people. We've been having a conversation over the past couple of days, and one user told us, it's impossible to stress about life problems when 100% of my attention is focused on, for example, falling off while cantering without stirrups. And another person responded to that comment and agreed, said how much of the focus it takes to ensure that this person's maintaining a proper position and steering correctly. I have no room for any thoughts other than what I am doing in the moment. Martha, I imagine when people are hearing about horse therapy for the first time, how much are comments like that an important part of why this is a therapeutic practice for some people?
Well, I haven't heard that a lot. Sometimes I say, so you do therapy for horses? We say,
yeah,
no.
What does that mean? It's not for the horses, it's for the people, although it helps the horses, right?
Well, I don't know, but we say, no, the horses help us help people. So I'm not sure. What was your question?
So when you say that, can you explain a little bit of what facilitators do for clients when you're thinking about being your co-facilitator? How does this work?
Well, I like the word facilitator because actually the horse does a lot of the work. And horses are very sensitive to us, to other creatures around them. So they pick up on our feelings and our emotions. So the client, whatever they're feeling, will show up in the horse. The horse will react to or even mirror what they're feeling. And then we just bring their attention to what the horse is doing and ask them to interact with the horse and see if they can get the horse to do certain things. And then we'll ask them to come talk about what just happened and how they feel about that, and if what just happened reminds them of anything in their life, relationships that they have, situations that they have, and then they can make the connections.
For you at Two Spirit Counseling Center, what kind of clients do you typically see? What's your client base?
Well, it's mostly women, but not by our choice. That's just who tends to show interest in this right now. Women who might be dealing with insecurity, stress, anxiety, maybe they're just stuck in one way or another in their life and they want some help. And sometimes it's a group situation, sometimes it's individual.
You know, we had another comment from a Reddit user who was saying what you said about how this was someone who has a lot of anxiety, and they said that the horse immediately picks up on your emotions even when you don't realize
right.
them. This person said, when I'm with my horse, I become mindful of my state of mind. It's easy to miss small signs on your own, but not when they're mirrored back at you by
right.
your horse. Christy, has that been your experience?
It has, very much so. And I was kind of aware of that because I did go read up before going out, and so I had that knowledge of, okay, a horse is going to pick up on that. But I've seen that where I've gone in and I've been nervous, or working with riders and seeing them being nervous and seeing the horse mirror that, and then watching that change even through a session. And even last night I had a rider who was very anxious, and the horse was very anxious, but as the rider, as he calmed down, I would see the horse calm down. And it's a very interesting thing to watch.
Well, it's an interesting thing for me, because I would think that would make it an even more stressful situation. If you think you're making an animal nervous, how does it work in the reverse, though? Sometimes it doesn't, maybe.
You know, it's a lot of times it depends on your rider. And, you know, and again, sometimes it's a medicine and the applesauce trick.
Okay.
And one of the things is just, and a lot of too is acknowledging it, because one of the things we're also doing out there is a teaching situation. So last night with my rider, you know, I acknowledged it to let him know, okay, you notice how the horse is acting very anxious and you're feeling very anxious. So we worked through some breathing exercises and stuff, and, you know, then acknowledged, okay, how are you feeling? Now, did you notice the horse as well is calmed down? So it's pointing those things out, and then talking. So, okay, how can we now apply this to when you're not here, if you're in school? The writer I was working with was school age. So when you're at school, you know, and you're feeling anxious, how can we now apply this?
And Martha, do you use that kind of self-reflection also in your therapy sessions?
Yes. That what they learn in the arena with the horse needs to apply to their life and the bigger arena of their life.
And Martha, you said your clientele is mostly female. Dory, what kind of clients do you usually help facilitate sessions with at Healing Horses? Christy mentioned, is there a lot of children? What ages are you working with?
We work with all ages. We're open to working with anybody, but many of our clients are children and teenagers. Most of our clients are.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Christy, I would love you to tell that story about your Saturday client.
Yeah. Just, and it kind of fits in just as you were saying there's, as we teach them to apply things outside of the arena. We have a new client on Saturdays I've been with for a couple weeks, and was sharing with him in his first session, teaching him just through brushing the horse as an example of one of the activities that we do, and we were working on some mindful breathing. I have a background in dialectical behavior therapy, or DBT. And so we were working on breathing exercises, and was sharing with him that, you know, outside, if you start getting anxious or things like that, this is something you can think of. And so last week when he had come back and we were just kind of reviewing things and going through, he told me, he says, well, Miss Christy, I was at school this week and I started feeling really anxious and upset. He says, and I stopped and I thought about Flash, who was the horse he had been working with. I thought about Flash and brushing him. He's like, and I started breathing and I calmed down. He says, and the rest of my day went really good. And I was so excited that he shared that. And so I asked him, I said, well, how would your day have normally gone? He goes, oh, I would have gotten in a lot of trouble and probably would have gotten sent to the principal's office, and he said, it just wouldn't have been a good day at all.
Mm.
So it was so exciting to see just in, you know, a couple days of that, seeing how he started to incorporate that. And that also told me how well we could start adding in other things. So it's exciting to see, and it's exciting to see the clients being excited. He was so happy to share that with me. So it's just,
it sounds like it's a great relationships that you, that are being developed, and techniques as well. And I wanted to ask all of you, and Christy, you mentioned you had worked with other animals. Martha, let me start with you though. What do you think it is about therapy horses that's different than, for example, other therapy animals? There's a lot of, you know, people are now, I was just talking to a friend this weekend about therapy dogs, mm-hmm. and how, particularly with people with depression, how having a therapy dog can be helpful. Mm-hmm. What is it about a horse that's different?
Okay, that's a good question. Dogs are predators, like we are predators. A horse is a prey animal, which is different from us. And they have to rely on the herd, their group, to survive out in the wild. So they're highly sensitive to what the rest of the group is feeling. And they rely on their gut instincts, kind of like radar. And that helps us because we need to pay attention to our gut. And a lot of times we'll rely on our brain and what our brain's telling us, but our gut might be saying something just the opposite. And so what we do, and it's Dr. Melanie Markline that I work with, and we work out at Darren Waller Horsemanship, which is her husband, and what we start with is getting people to tune into what they're actually feeling, putting a word to it, and then paying attention to the feeling, which sometimes we're taught socially to push your feelings down and just do the right thing, whatever that right thing might be. So instead, the horses help us to really tune into what is our gut telling us, what are our instincts telling us, and then acting on that, paying attention to it, using it as information, and then acting on it.
Christy, what's the difference for you with horses versus other animals?
I think one of the great things about horses, and this may not like sound like it's great, but in the end it is horses are very large animals. Mm-hmm. And especially think of dogs or other animals, we're larger than them. A horse is big. And especially a lot of people, if they have any type of an abuse background or what that abuse is, they feel very insecure or threatened, especially things that would be bigger than them. So walking in and now seeing this large animal, there's an insecurity sometimes with that. So to build that relationship with that horse and that bonding, they can realize that here is this this entity, per se, that is larger than them, but they can become friends with it. So there is this comfortableness that they can have this relationship with something that is larger with them, and it becomes a safe relationship. And it starts to help them with this confidence and this feeling of feeling safe around something that is larger than them. So in that type of a mindset, it really starts to help them heal in that type of an area.
Martha, I know you work with a lot of victims of abuse. How important is what Christy's talking about for people who've especially women who have been abused?
Yeah, I wanted to add to that because when a person, either a woman, child, or anybody, can see that they can influence the behavior of such a large creature, and that creature will look to this person as a leader and obey and follow and trust that person, that's extremely empowering. And I know for me, because just like you, I found horses to be very helpful to me because I was going through some challenges several years ago. And when we see that these large animals will follow our lead, people don't scare us so much.
Mm. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about therapy horses, about horse therapy, how it's helping people. And note, after this conversation, we also are going to be talking about the weather. I know it's cold out there today. If you have questions for our meteorologist who's going to be joining us at the end of the hour, Jeff Frame, give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21STShow, and we'll have that conversation in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've been talking about how horses can help in therapeutic situations with people who are going through trauma, through mental illness, having problems with depression and anxiety. My guests are Dorothy Reichel. She's the owner of Healing Horses Stables in Pasotum. Christy Blue is with us as well. She's a volunteer there. And Martha Klipp, she's a co-facilitator with the Two Spirit Counseling Center. She works at another facility also helping with this. Dory, I wanted to ask you, we've been talking about people who've suffered abuse, depression. You also work with people who have gone through PTSD. How is that helpful? How is someone going through the trauma of PTSD? How is a horse and working with horses helpful for them?
Because horses are prey animals, they have very large startle reflexes. They're either going to run or fight, flee or fight. And usually they flee. That's their first choice. And I was working with one of our 11-year-old clients has PTSD, and I said to her, it's kind of like horses have PTSD. And she looked at me and she said, I have PTSD. Oh. And so that was good that she could identify and that, you know, it made it a little more normal for her. And then as they learn how to calm the horse, how to predict ahead of time what might scare the horse and how to calm the horse, they internalize it and learn to use those skills for themselves too.
I wonder for you all, how important is it also that it's a physical activity when you're working with a horse, that you're outside, that you're doing actual hard physical work? I imagine that's also a really important thing for people's mental state. What do you guys think?
I think when we use our whole body, we learn it a lot faster than just book knowledge.
Mm-hmm. For people who have never had experience with this, for those of listening, I wonder if each of you could just take a minute to explain how important you think it is having horses, whether they've helped you personally or with clients. Martha, do you want to start?
Sure. They've helped me a lot. I'll just say that. One thing that Melanie and I focus on is the fact that horses don't lie. They have no false self. They don't pretend. What they feel on the inside will come up on the outside. Whereas people, on the other hand, we learn to pretend and have a false self. So horses help us tap into our authentic self.
Mm-hmm. Christy?
For me, it's, you know, I turn into a little kid sometimes out there. And one thing that I've learned is just being out and around the horses, this is something that can benefit anybody. You don't have to have an issue to go out there. Anybody can benefit by coming out and just spending some time, whether it's coming out and just meeting the horses or coming out for a session. And everybody can gain something from it.
And I would just like to also add that there have been studies that our brain waves are changed when we're around horses, mm-hmm. that it ups that we're much calmer and more centered because we're around horses.
Mm. And for people who are interested in learning more about this, what kind of things would they do? Christy, what kind of volunteer work have you done?
I have done a little bit of everything from leading a horse to putting saddles on to scooping the poo.
That's a good place to start right there.
Right, because I imagine there's a lot of that work to be done too, right?
Yeah, there is a lot to do. And Dory was very honest. She says, you know, if you just want to come out and pet the horses, that works too. So there is something for everyone.
And Dory, what I'm just curious with, we're about to talk about the weather in a minute, but this time of year in winter, what kind of, does your work kind of shift inside? What do you do with this? Are the horses still outside?
We have an indoor arena and we have a little bit of heating in it. Not a lot, but I encourage riders to wear, well, everyone who comes out to wear lots of layers. And with the kids, we have them ride without a saddle, and then they get the body heat of the horse. Mm-hmm. So it really keeps them warm.
And is this something that, for your therapy, is this something that, does it cost money? Do you need a doctor or some type of mental health professional recommendation to work with you? How does this happen?
Well, we have a sliding scale, so we never turn anybody away if they aren't able to pay. And depending on what disability the rider might have, we ask for a doctor's, especially with Down syndrome, they can have an unstable cervical alignment, mm-hmm. and it's potentially life-threatening if they fall. So they have to have an x-ray ahead of time and a doctor to say they don't have that condition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'll put more information on this at our website at 21stshow.org. But I want to thank my guests, Dori Reigel, who's the owner of Healing Horses Stable in Posotum, Christy Blue, who's a volunteer, and Martha Klipp with Two Spirit Counseling Center in Urbana. Ladies, thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Winter's here, even though it's not officially on the books yet. Everyone's reaching into their closets for their cold weather gear. And if you're like me, you may also be wondering, how long is this going to last? Well, to help answer this is Jeff Frame. He's a professor in atmospheric sciences at the University of Illinois. He's in studio with us on this frigid December morning. Jeff, I'm looking over. Okay, it's 20 degrees, according to our trusty weather, whatever we have here that's in studio that has all of the temperatures. Jeff, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
If anyone has questions, by the way, Jeff's happy to take them. If you call us quick, 1-800-222-9455 or tweet to 21STShow. Jeff, it's the coldest weather we've seen so far this year. How unusual is it for us to see the temperatures we've seen? We're not even yet at official meteorological winter yet.
Well, right? the season of winter starts on December 22nd, but meteorological winter, climatological winter starts back on December 1st. So it's the coldest 3 months out of the year, but for sure the coldest weather we've seen this season. But we're not seeing record cold. Our record lows, at least here in Champaign-Urbana, today was -7, and then it falls down below -10 for most of the rest of the month. So although it's cold, it's uncomfortable, it's not record-breaking cold.
And what are we looking at in terms of weather conditions throughout the state for the next 24 hours?
Sure. For the next 24 hours, hate to tell you all this, but it's going to be getting colder from today into tomorrow. Really, from I-74 north, the National Weather Service has issued a wind chill advisory for overnight tonight. We're looking at wind chills below -10 along I-74, maybe below -20 up near the Wisconsin border. And then for tomorrow, highs only near 10 in the northern part of the state, down in near 20 in the south, with wind chills in the single digits to maybe below zero for most of tomorrow, despite some teasing sunshine.
So that bitter cold probably means we're not really going to see any snowfall. Are we expecting any snow at this point? Any more snow?
Not for tomorrow, but our next shot of wintry weather looks like it comes in for the weekend. So if you have any travel plans, maybe a family holiday gathering, students heading home from finals, I know finals get done here at the U of I on Friday. Looks like the best shot of heavy snow going to be over the far northern part of the state, I-88, I-90 and north, where they could see again several inches up along the Wisconsin border. Here in central Illinois.
And are we thinking that's going to be on Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah, beginning Friday night into Saturday.
Okay.
Up there. And then down farther south, we could see light snow to maybe an icy mix. I'm not talking about anything heavy, but as we saw here in Champaign-Urbana yesterday, just 1 inch of snow really messed up the roads, and it takes even less ice to do that. So Friday night, certainly forecast isn't set in stone yet, but pay attention to the forecast Friday night. Saturday early, it warms up. Down far southern Illinois might hit 50 or even higher early Saturday.
Okay, well, I'll go down there then.
And then back to reality. Strong cold front sweeps through the entire state Saturday afternoon, dropping everything back below freezing Saturday night. Sunday, I think even colder than tomorrow. Highs single digits north, near 20 down to the south with wind chills, especially in the morning, well below zero.
Wow. So, Jeff, let me ask you, we're seeing lots of headlines about polar vortex, if the polar vortex is back. We've heard this term a lot since 2014. Can you explain what it means and if that is something that we need to be thinking and talking and knowing about this winter?
Okay, sure. The polar vortex, it's a bit of a complicated meteorological term that's been adopted by the media since that big cold snap back
right,
in
so
January 2014.
You can enlighten all of us on what it really means.
So the polar vortex is a circulation that's always there over the pole, and it's strongest up in the stratosphere, which is over 6 miles high. That's up where the ozone layer is, so way high up in the atmosphere. And it's there all year. It's there in the summer, okay? And then you go down below that to about the level of a jet airliner, you see a reflection of the polar vortex down at that altitude. And sometimes the winds blowing around that vortex, the vortex is stronger. And when that occurs, the cold air, believe it or not, is penned up over the North Pole when that happens. If you think back to the fall, it wasn't all that, it was very warm here. Where was all the cold air? It was penned up over the North Pole and back in Asia and Siberia. But when those winds weaken a little bit, when that polar vortex down at the jet airline level weakens a little bit, we get waves forming along it, and little pieces of that vortex can come south. And because of how the jet stream pattern influences the surface pressure pattern and the surface winds, that can deliver shots of Arctic air down south here into Illinois and all the way sometimes farther south than that.
And so do we think that's going to happen this year? How do we know when that's going to happen?
Well, we have pretty good predictability of the weather going out about 7 days or so. So the cold shot we saw late last week, the cold shot we're seeing now, the cold shot for the beginning of next week, all that has been fairly well predicted days in advance, and we're able to do that fairly well. Going
and
out
is that the Arctic? Is that coming down?
Yeah, that's coming south from the Arctic.
So
yeah.
Technically, that is kind of, we are in, would you say that this is, we're experiencing a polar vortex or we're about
well,
to?
Well, the polar vortex is always there.
Right,
so
but
I don't
mean
want
for
to say
us.
We're experiencing
well,
it.
I mean for
there
us.
Is a piece of the polar vortex that is, okay. Yes, influencing our
so
weather.
So we are having polar vortex conditions or well, influence conditions.
And that would just be Arctic air, colder than average conditions,
okay.
Yes.
So, and that's pretty common, actually, it sounds like you're saying.
Cold snaps in the winter are not uncommon at
sure.
all. If we think back to last winter, how warm last winter was, there were a couple days, I think I remember around Martin Luther King Day, that day was quite cold. The high was like 10 or something, and it was windy, but it was a very transient, short-lived cold shot. So seeing shots of Arctic air here in the winter is not uncommon at all.
Well, and then we also then start talking about things like La Nina, El Nino, mm-hmm. how that's Pacific temperatures, how that influences us. What are we seeing this year with that?
Right. So El Nino or La Nina is an oscillation of water temperatures in the equatorial eastern Pacific Ocean, so the area west of South America. Last winter was characterized by a very strong El Nino event, which was much warmer water temperatures than usual in that part of the ocean. And as a result of that, last winter was very much warmer than average over most of the United States, which is typical of an El Nino and especially a strong El Nino. Now, looking ahead to this winter, the situation has been oscillating between a neutral state, i.e. near average water temperatures, or slightly cooler than average, which would be a weak La Nina. And those types
and so that's
of,
not good news for us for our weather then, right?
If you like warmth, no. But there are snow lovers out there in the audience. I do know that. So this winter almost surely going to be colder than it was last winter just because last winter was so warm.
Sure.
So I think we're going to be near to maybe slightly below average on temperature this winter. And then looking ahead at overall precipitation, that's a bit tougher nut to crack, but it looks like we'll be near average, maybe slightly above average in terms of precipitation. But now one caveat with this is that is for the entire winter, December, January, and February. And again, if we look back to last winter, there's a great example of this, how the entire country was very much warmer than average over the entire winter. But there was one storm in late January that hit the East Coast. Biggest snowstorm on record in Central Park, 2 feet of snow in Washington, D.C. So it was one big storm amidst a very much warmer than average winter. And those individual storms that bring the snow, those we really can't predict
right.
out
those
beyond
are your...
about 7 days.
Sure. All right. Well, thank you so much for filling us in, getting us prepared for this pretty difficult weather we're going to be facing for the next couple of days at least. Jeff Frame is a clinical assistant professor in the Department of Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Thanks for being with me, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
That does it for us today. Tomorrow, we're going to be providing tips for all of you who do what I call senior tech support. That's when your families ask you to do all of their tech support for them over the holidays. We're going to help you out with that. We're going to have experts who are sharing tips. We'd love to hear your stories. Maybe somebody accidentally installed, had malware in their computer. Their Facebook account got hacked. That's what I was dealing with a couple days ago. Leave us a voicemail at 217-300-2121. 217-300-2121. We've got experts who are going to answer your questions. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay warm out there. Have a great day.